Jack and Jill here.
Hi.
Welcome to the show today. Welcome to the Jack and Jill show specifically. This is entertaining real estate investment advice. I'm Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from kind of sunny, kind of cooler Northern California right now, up in San Francisco.
Today, Jill and I talk about how to choose a side business. It's a little bit more complex than you would think. And we'll get into that.
Is it now, Jack?
It is.
Isn't it like choosing a side dish?
No, it's not.
It's just a side. It's not the main one.
This is one of those shows.
Can't this just be your hobby and just kind of run wild with it and make all the mistakes
Jill's
that you want?
Poke me with a stick the whole time. No, it's exactly not that.
Oh.
It's not your hobby. That's actually one of my very first points.
Oh.
It should have nothing to do with your hobby.
I shouldn't. No, this is a valid question. So you're telling me that as we get into this, I'm going to find it's nothing to do with doing what you love and making it a side business. Like maybe I like to scrapbook.
I wouldn't recommend that.
Okay. Well, then I can't wait to hear about this.
Hey, before we get into it, let's take a question posted by one of our members on the jackjill.com online community. It's free.
Could you imagine if I scrapbooked and you came home and I had people sitting around and like we're all drinking wine and eating Cheetos and we have all these paper and pages and stuff around? That would be kind of painful.
I think it, you know what? Sorry. Jill, if it makes you happy, okay. I'd be okay with that.
All right.
If you came home with a heroin habit,
oh,
then we'd have
to now talk. We gotta talk. Thanks, Jack. There's always something. So many rules that you have.
Like no heroin.
Exactly.
No baloney and no heroin.
That's right. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I don't know how to pronounce this. Corey asks, I recently purchased a land parcel in Jefferson County, Texas, and it was sold to the state.
Texas, you think?
I'm going with I'm going to go with
Arkansas.
Oh, no, we're both wrong. Hold on. Let me read the whole question. That will help us. I recently purchased a land parcel in Jefferson County, and it was sold to the state in 2007, which makes it past the redemption period, according to the state of Alabama.
Oh.
Yeah, we're both wrong. All right. The owner sent a handwritten letter asking me to forward the amount so he could redeem his property back. I paid $450 for this parcel, and the deed shows how much was paid. Do I need to respond to his letter? Does he have the right to redeem back after 10 plus years have passed? Since he wants to redeem, how much should I be asking him to pay? Any help, any advice is truly appreciated. Thanks in advance. This is all you, Jack.
Yeah, so what happens is, and I'll try to be delightfully light about this. Property people who own real estate have to pay property taxes, and when they don't, a long time passes and the property goes back to the taxing authority, which is almost always either the state or the county. And that's what happened here. It went so far back that it went to a public auction and Corey bought it, and whoever this guy is that's responding was probably the person who owned it back then, and just they failed to pay their taxes. Mm-hmm. By the way, it's not some big brother type awful thing that happens. That you get about 500 pieces of mail and a million different ways to redeem the property for back taxes plus some fees all along the course of this. So why this person, I purchased tons of back tax property, and the situation Corey's in, I've never experienced it.
Exactly.
So it's very strange. Anyway, his question is, do you think it's him or her?
I'm going to say it's a him.
The question is, do I need to call this guy back? Am I responsible for the redemption period? So all of those things are very state or local or county specific, but mostly state specific. And I can only tell you what I would do. I would not call this person back. If I paid $450 for it, I'd offer to sell it to him for some amount that is less than retail.
Mm-hmm.
But more than $450.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I'm pretty confident that's what Joe
That's a good
too.
Solution. I mean, out here we have two. You know what? I mean, if you want to be a good person, say, hey, I picked up your property. I'll sell it to you. It's all current now or whatever it is. I'll sell it back to you if you want. Because it's gone all the way through the proper legal procedures. I personally do not think that this guy has a leg to stand on.
Me either.
Meaning the former owner, not Corey. So that if you want to be nice, offer to sell it back. If you don't want to, or, you know, or whatever it is, you know, I would just contact the county and just double check, you know, confirm with them, you know, do I have, what do I need to do? They may even just say, this is what I'm guessing, that it's been 12 plus years. That guy obviously found you, but he really doesn't own it anymore. He got all the notices. He took it. It was taken back. It was done all the right way. And there's nothing you need to do.
Yeah. I mean, this is a personal thing. Then you have to make a decision on how you're going to handle it. Most counties have no patience for, look, this back tax thing. So we all sit around and say, oh my God, you bought a property for $450 in Alabama. That's awesome. That's where we're coming from.
Right.
Where the county's coming from is how many properties are in the thing this year that we have to deal with. This wasn't part of my job description. So they have that attitude. Right. There's 450 properties this year. Well, there was only 200 last year. Mm-hmm. And we're all jumping up and down here, and we have talk shows about it like this one. The county, they get very impatient with people who
Pay their taxes.
Yes, they cause work for them.
Yeah.
And they're very happy with people like us most of the time, where
who
you come with
it.
A big cashier's check and buy the whole auction. That saves them a ton of work. So that's kind of where they're coming from. So they're not going to, most of the time, they're not going to be real happy to speak with the former owner. They're mm-hmm. going to be much more happy to have you deal with all the stuff, pay them, so it's off their to-do list.
Right.
And then you go deal with them.
Right. Because you have breathed new life into this property. I've talked to them, and that's how I think they see it. They're like, oh, thank you. This one's now current again. We have a new owner. They're going to hopefully pay their taxes. That's how they see it. We're going to pay the taxes. It's going to be great, and we're all back where we should be. And they're excited by the new guy.
Every county is different. I've seen counties specifically in Idaho and in northern Utah where they refuse to have a back tax property. Mm-hmm. They refuse to even have one single property go back. They call like the members of their community and they say, can you please pay this tax bill for this other person over here? They just don't want to deal with it. It's not part of their culture.
Got it.
And then there's places like northern Arizona or like southeastern Michigan, where there's 40, 50, 70,000 units at any given time on the back tax roll.
Mm-hmm.
And they're used to dealing with it. So there's lots and lots and lots of dough to be made with mm-hmm. back tax property.
That's true.
That's a topic for a different...
Oh,
and
you.
I've done it.
I know.
Qualified.
Yes, you are.
Today's topic, how to choose a side business. This is the Meet the Show. How would you choose a side business, Jill? Would you say, like you said earlier in the show, oh, I love ice cream. I'm going to have an ice cream parlor.
Well, that's certainly one way. You know, how would I personally, you know what I would do to personally sit up and pay attention and choose a side business? One is my innate way and one is what I've learned from you.
Oh, no.
Oh.
That means you're all messed up.
No, my innate way is, what do I know a lot about and what comes easy to me and what would I be an idiot to not seriously move forward on and consider making a business? That's one way. The second way is your way is, what is out there? I've seen you spend time and do a tremendous amount of research and get to know other businesses and business models and stuff just to see if it's a viable thing. So that's the other way.
This is how an old school accountant thinks about things like this, meaning me. Any side business that you choose, or any business for that matter, needs to have reoccurring revenue. The easiest and best example that I can use of that, use to make this point, is a dry cleaner, where you just keep going, and to me, you just keep going back.
Mm-hmm.
You might change the different dry cleaner, you might have less or more, or if you're in a small town, a grocery store, that's very reoccurring revenue. A lot of dry cleaners now pick up the stuff right from your house to separate themselves from everybody else. That's reoccurring revenue. Any type of subscription base on the internet is reoccurring revenue. And it's no accident that we have a subscription base and we provide data.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that I sat down with myself long before we ever started anything like Land Academy or House Academy, and asked myself, and Joe, or landlord, Mm-hmm. What's better than having somebody move all their furniture in and continually pay every single month because they have to live somewhere and then now they don't want to move?
Got it.
It's maybe one of the best business models there ever was, if not the best, in my opinion.
Versus making a one-time use product.
Versus being a salesperson, which is my example. Or let's say like a plumber, where you're just kind of waiting for the phone to ring.
Waiting for something to break.
Yeah. Or for that matter, a surgeon.
Waiting for
or
something
a real
to
estate
break.
Agent. This is the problem, innate problem with being a real estate agent. The sale's done.
Oh, there's several.
Well, yeah. Aside from all the mental issues. I mean, as a business model.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
You sell the house or you list it, you sell it, and that's it. There's no real reoccurring situation unless you know what you're doing from a marketing standpoint. We've got a next one teed up and the next one teed up.
Right.
All right.
But don't get too comfortable here because I'm going to come to you in a year with a better house.
No.
No.
Could you imagine?
Yeah. You never do that.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure whatever business you're in is reoccurring. Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, you need to make sure it's somewhat scalable. So I hit on this just a couple minutes ago. Scalable meaning not repeatable, but scalable. So if you write a book and you sell 10 copies, it takes just as much effort to write that book as if you sell 10 copies or 10 million copies.
Mm-hmm.
That's scalable. If you write a piece of software and you write it and you support it, and you sell it, 10 people buy it, it's just the same amount of work as 10 million people buying it. Mm-hmm. That's true scalability. Software and publishing are real good examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
What's not scalable is anything to do with sales. You do it once and that's it. Again, you got to sell another one.
Well, don't you have to sell your business, though? I mean, come on. That's the dry cleaner. Don't think there's not sales involved in that.
I'm not knocking sales.
Oh, okay.
I'm just talking about scalability and repeatability right now.
Okay. I want to know what else you've sat down and had a chat with yourself about.
What are you talking about? What does that mean?
Because you started the whole thing. You started off by saying, you know, I sat down and had a chat with myself about this whole side business thing. And I'm like, my head goes, I go somewhere else. Sorry.
Like, I'm not happy with my current hair color?
Yes. No, just kidding. I don't know.
It's not something that's ever crossed my mind.
I don't know. All right. So, all right.
Hold on. I have a couple more things to say, and then we're going to get into actual, like, well, what if I hate changing car oil? You want to make sure whatever business you're in, you have very, very low fixed costs, meaning costs that are not associated with sales. The two that are most famous are real estate. So you go, let's say you have an ice cream shop, you have to go rent it, get a bunch of equipment. This is even before you make a dollar.
Right.
You have to staff it. It has to be open a certain number of hours, even if nobody walks through the door. So now you got, some people call it overhead. It's really called fixed costs.
True.
So you want very low fixed costs and very high variable costs, meaning if you do sell a piece as an ice cream cone, that the vast majority of the costs that are associated in your company happen with that sale. Ice cream is a horrific example of that.
Right.
McDonald's or any kind of restaurant is a really bad example of that. Or manufacturing, for that matter. You don't want it. You have to spend a huge amount of upfront money just to see what happens.
Exactly.
This is a bad idea.
Right. Well, and you have spoilage. I mean, stuff you can't shelf, too. I mean, that would be scary.
So the opposite end of that is a drop ship company where you have somebody in China making some kind of product that's really unique. And it's on the internet, and it costs you 42 cents to slap up a website. You do a little Google Ads work, some marketing, and bang, you sell the first one. A great example of this is a buddy of ours has a company that sells gopher traps.
Yep.
He doesn't make them at all. He has somebody else making it, just markets it. Every time one sells, he makes $25. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't even ship it. They ship it for him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of, I think he's got $1,500 into this whole company, and he drops ships and makes $20-$25 every time someone mm-hmm. sells. He doesn't even know. He just looks at the numbers.
That's funny, isn't it? Yeah.
So that's a good example of variable cost versus fixed cost. We haven't even gotten to the fun stuff yet.
Yeah.
It's killing you, isn't it?
It is killing me. I'm being very patient. You see, I'm sitting on my hands.
The final point here is, before we can talk about the fun Joe stuff, is you have to sleep, eat, and breathe marketing for this company, which is really what Joe wants to talk about. Mm. Because you can't market something and talk about something on a silly show like this unless you're interested in it.
True.
So let's come full circle.
Oh, could you imagine?
Can you just, if we had a bunch of oil change shops sitting around talking about this day in and day out?
We were doing oil changes?
Yeah.
Oh, we could make that fun.
We could. You know what? On a show like that, I would just talk about the customers.
Yeah, that's exactly what would happen. This would be car talk.
Mm-hmm. I would put like a, I don't know, some cameras in there and we'd make a whole show.
Oh my gosh. That'd be really funny. I'd be playing jokes on the, practical jokes on the mechanics. That would not be funny. You open it up the hood and there's a clown staring at you. I would do that.
Oh my God, that's a great idea.
Yes.
God, you can make fun out of anything, can't you?
Oh yeah, I would. That's what I would do. That's what happens when I get bored, by the way. Careful.
So I think that your dad, who's a lifelong airline pilot, started a couple side businesses, and can, you know, or anybody else, do you know anybody else that started a side business successfully and it replaced the regular business, or a horror story? Do you know any stories? Because I'm full of stories about this.
I know. Okay, well, his side business was rental properties. It didn't replace his business, but it was an awesome side income. No brainer. I'm trying to think. No. Yeah.
So while she's thinking about it, I want to talk about, very, very briefly, the few types of revenue there are on this planet. There's operational income, the kind that you get from owning a company, like Land Academy, or like an ice cream shop, or a manufacturing facility. That, by hands down, this is the most profitable way to make money. Operational income. Passive income, which is grossly overused in my opinion recently because of the internet. People like Pat Flynn would sit around and say just this magical thing called passive income where you just have to buy something and this, you don't have to do anything else. You just watch the money come in.
Right.
That's fictional.
You just promote it.
Passive income is like stock dividends, right? You have no control, don't care. You just watch. You don't even watch anything. You get a check every whatever it ends up being now, quarter for 1/1,000,000,000th of one penny per share of stock that you own. And you just kind of pray every day that it's going to happen. That's real passive income.
Right.
And there's, you know, there's a capital gains type income where you're flipping property. Sometimes you have to pay that. But my whole point is this. There's nothing better than operational income. There's, it's also in labor, mostly labor intensive.
Right.
You know, Jill and I have had companies in the past that we've sold that make 90% profit margins on operational income. So, you know, the margins on how we flip land are in the thousands of percent.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and so
it's true.
There's all types of.
I want to ask you some questions.
My hope. Okay, good. So here, I'm going to end on this before you get into it.
Okay.
Owning a successful business and making the money that you want to make has nothing to do with what you're interested in.
All right. Said it hit that point home for me, didn't you?
That's it.
Thank you. No, and I agree with you. I agree. You know, I was thinking a little bit more, and I know a lot of people that started side businesses and failed because it just wasn't enough, like you're saying. They didn't come at it from the right accounting perspective and really, you know, cover all the bases like you're talking about right now. But so I have a few business models that I want to run by you and ask you.
Oh, this is fun.
You know, where you think they fall. And you covered fast food. We got that. Talk to me about Costco. I'm like, how would you categorize Costco? Because they do a little bit of both. They have the membership. And they have the retail.
Funny you should ask.
Thank you.
I studied this a little bit because I'm fascinated with Costco, not as a consumer, but as a business model. And the guy that started it, his whole model was start a club, subscription revenue model, $50 or $100 a year. What does it cost at Costco?
Like $125 for the executive, whatever.
So $100 a year. Same thing with AAA. AAA, the insurance / auto. Save my daughter from flat tire company.
That's the one.
It's the same model. You pay in $50 to $100 a year, and you get this unbelievable service. It's unmatched. You get at Costco, you get, you know, unbelievable product quality for cost, or close to cost as they can come to keep the lights on and keep everybody's paycheck clearing.
Right.
Brilliant model.
Exactly.
It's brilliant.
Exactly.
So I that's a, you know,
but do you think he's kind of touching on both? Yeah, he's doing, he's capturing both, which is brilliant.
Well, he's put himself in a position to, you know, it's really easy. The board meetings in a company like that go like this. Let's raise our prices across the board 3% next year. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Why don't more companies do this? Like, imagine this one. If it were me and I owned Walmart, I would be doing this for my prescriptions. Pay a membership and all your prescriptions are half off or something like that. Because we all know there's a huge markup.
That's an incredibly brilliant question, Joe. Why doesn't everybody do the logical thing in a company? It all makes sense to us.
Yeah.
Here's why. There's board members. They're a publicly traded company. They have to answer to a million people. Nobody at the top level of any company like that wants to lose their job, so they don't want to rock the boat. They're just lifers. Nothing gets done. Everybody who's listening to this knows exactly what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking
about. This is why people bail from $250,000, $500,000 salary jobs with stock options to go buy and sell real estate because they can't stand it.
Yeah.
I did. I left a partnership situation at KPMG for exactly what you're saying because you can't get anything done.
I've heard politics are like that too.
So Costco, yes, you have. Costco started that way. And they're implementing the guy's original model. McDonald's is still implementing that same model. No change happens there. And Walmart stated is implementing the original model. Perfect example, In-N-Out. If you're from the West Coast, you know what In-N-Out is. If you're from the East, you have no idea what we're talking about.
Right.
But In-N-Out is a hamburger stand
family model. Still family owned and operated, and they won't let anybody on the outside
and they have
in.
Five or six products, and that's it.
Yeah. It's awesome. That would be a scary one, too. It's not a membership. Like membership pricing, almost.
Yeah.
But just a very interesting
There's nothing
model.
Better than publishing. I have never...
Publishing? Books?
Publishing. Publishing anything.
Good.
Where you write it once, or it's software,
it's
or books, or what we do. We provide content.
Uh-huh.
There's no better business than that. You need to stay on... It's busy.
Yep.
You know, you're not going to sit around and do nothing, I'll tell you that.
Right.
And once you have one success, like we have with An Academy, everybody wants more. And you just get on the treadmill and it's profitable.
Exactly.
I don't need to tell you, Jill.
Thank you.
So I would heavily recommend that. And then here's my final thought on all of this. There's never been a time, ever, where it's been cheaper to start a company. Ever. You're sitting right in front of an internet, a half hour from now, on your computer, you could have a website up and probably for less than $100, if you know what you're doing. And start selling some stuff. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, sell yourself. I don't know. Sell some real estate.
Yeah.
That's what worked for us. I could talk for hours on this, and I don't want to. There's only three people listening to this episode anyway left.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking to me?
And you're not
I
one.
Left.
Jill's not one of them. You've done it again. You wasted another 30 minutes listening to the Jack and Jill show. Join us tomorrow where we talk about one of Jill's favorite topics, why time off is so important.
Woohoo! And we answer your question, should you have one, posted on our online community found on jackjill.com. You are not alone in your real estate ambition.
Whew.
I helped you there.
Yeah.
Good. You had a lot to say. I understand.
You know what? I could have gone
good.
On for a couple more
There were a
hours.
Lot of notes. I was looking at your notes here. This is one that you really wrote a lot down.
It's so important.
It is.
I wish I could communicate, like stand on a soapbox with a megaphone and say, don't open a dress shop.
Yeah. Think about it. Think before you do it. Isn't that sad? You're right. You know, I'm with you. How many places we've all seen them open up and there's nobody in there and then you see them close up and it breaks my heart every time I see that happen. Yeah, restaurants, little shops.
Your restaurant is the most popular business to start and it's the highest fail rate and the whole thing.
That's got to be tough. So, hey, share the fun by subscribing on iTunes or wherever you are listening. And while you're at it, please rate us there. We are Jack and Jill.
Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.